And now it's time for Queer Talk. How are you doing today, Matthew?
Doing all right. How's it going, Ryan?
Doing very well. Who do we have today?
All right. On today's program, we have Chris Sanders from the Tennessee Equality Project. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year. And we should also say that thanks to our producer, Dr. Joyce Arnold, got a note telling me that it's your birthday today.
Happy birthday. A year older and none the wiser, I'm afraid.
Oh, goodness. Well, so, you know, thanks for joining us on your birthday. But
sure.
Also, what's coming up with the Tennessee Equality Project? What's on the agenda?
Well, some of it's items that we have set. Other things are, how should I put it, things that have been set for us. In other words, situations that have been handed to us. The end of 2011 was extraordinarily busy in Middle Tennessee in particular. We saw the Tennessee Tea Party fire a parting shot at Congressman Barney Frank as he announced his retirement. I won't repeat on the air what they said about him, but it was pretty bad. They said it on Twitter, and that's something that we blew up significantly in the media. And then it was announced yesterday, or the day before, that they would be closing shop. So I'm not going to gloat too much, but I'm going to say that it's always good when there are positive transitions in politics in Middle Tennessee, and I certainly think that's one of them. I can run through the list, and then we can come back to them in depth if you'd like.
Sure, that'd be fine.
A few other items that have come up in Middle Tennessee just recently. I think many of your listeners will be familiar with the story of the lesbian couple that was denied partner visitation at Rolling Hills Hospital in Franklin, and that situation was resolved quickly, and we're thankful for that. But what's significant about that is that there's a Health and Human Services regulation that requires all hospitals participating in Medicare and Medicaid, which is most of them, to grant partner visitation. So that was a big national story as well. Another one that's come up in the same city, a gay man recently reported that he was raped, and he went to the Franklin Police Department, and he reports that he did not receive the best and most sympathetic treatment there. So we've contacted them and are trying to offer diversity training so that this sort of thing doesn't happen again. Not heard back yet. Final Middle Tennessee story, and then two quick things on state legislation. I think a lot of your listeners will know that a young gay man, Jacob Rogers, took his own life, a high school student in Cheatham County, recently, and we discovered that he had been bullied significantly and that a number of other students are still being bullied. So TEP, but along with a lot of other organizations, are working with members of that local community to try to advocate for changes in Cheatham County in the school system. Two quick hits on state legislation, and then we'll come back to whatever you'd like to. There's a relatively new bill that's come to national attention that's really exploded this last week. We call it the License to Bully Bill. And basically, it writes a loophole into the law that would allow students to express their views on homosexuality as long as they did so from a religious or philosophical or their political conviction point of view. We think that's a disaster waiting to happen, obviously. Glad to talk about that more. And one last thing on state legislation. The Don't Say Gay bill has been put on notice. It will be up in the first House Education Subcommittee. I'm not sure when that meeting is, but it looks like it's coming up fast. So the legislature reconvenes on January 10th, and after they do their votes on redistricting, we'll all be dealing with bills again. So we're right into the fire.
All right. Well, first up, I wanted to go back to what you said, what you were talking about with the state legislature issue, the quote-unquote license to bully bill.
Sure.
On face value, isn't it all sort of a red herring? I mean, don't people already have a First Amendment right to express their opinions? Why would this be?
In an academic sense, if there is a discussion of current events, They absolutely would. If there is a debate in a social studies class, it's mm-hmm. perfectly fine for students to take different sides on an issue, whether it be should Tennessee repeal its marriage discrimination amendment. And it's perfectly logical that in a debate in a 10th grade social studies class, there would be two sides so that students could be exposed to both points of view. What I think is problematic about this bill as it's written is that it might allow one student to go up to another student in the hallway and say, you're a sinner, or you're going to hell, or you're a sodomite, or, you know, something that is heavily couched in religion, but would still threaten that student. So that's the kind of thing we're concerned about. We're not concerned about the academic debates that might go on in a civics class. We're concerned about gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender students becoming defenseless in the face of a new loophole that would allow students who might bully them to have more ammunition, really.
And is TEP working with any other organizations around this bill? So
well, we're working directly with legislators on this, but over the last week, what we've really been doing is working with the national media to shine a heavy spotlight on this. And one of the positive things about that is that it causes the bill sponsors to rethink these issues. My sense is that when Family Action Council of Tennessee gave the sponsors this bill, the sponsors really didn't know what they were biting off. And I think this national debate, I mean, it's been on CNN, it's been in all the national blogs, a lot of Tennessee media outlets, the Commercial Appeal out of Memphis wrote an editorial against it just last night that appeared today. I think as the debate continues, you're going to see more retreat. That doesn't mean that it's going to be easy to defeat this bill, but it does mean that by defining the bill early, as we've been able to do, we've got it on the run.
And do you know who some of the sponsors are that you can let our listeners
yes.
know about that?
In the Senate, it's Senator Jim Tracy from Shelbyville, and in the House, it's Vance Dennis, and he's from West Tennessee. I forget the town. I should know, but I forget the town. Those two individuals are carrying the bill right now. My guess is that it may not run in the Senate. That's a possibility because Senator Tracy is definitely reevaluating in light of all the feedback that he's getting. One dangerous aspect of that is, though, if Senator Tracy chooses not to run the bill, Family Action could find another sponsor who would run the bill. So it's a series of chess moves throughout in the legislature. Just when you think you've got a bill beaten or on the ropes, it can come back in another form or through another person. So we're going to have to remain vigilant throughout the session.
Has there been any indication from the governor's administration about if they're going to take any early pressure position on the bill?
If I had to guess, and I don't speak for the governor, obviously, my sense is that quietly the administration may work against the bill. That is my own guess based on the fact that administration officials openly expressed dismay about the Don't Say Gay bill. Indeed, the governor himself considers it a distraction and told Jeff Woods as much in a city paper interview in 2011. So my hope is that the administration will huddle Republican lawmakers and say, we need to move on to something serious. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll never know the inside story on what those conversations are because they will not publicly break ranks, probably. But my guess is that the administration is not fond of this attention.
Mm-hmm. And now going back to a very tragic story that you mentioned, Jacob Rogers, the
right.
teenager who took his life in Cheatham County mm-hmm. after being bullied. What does the aftermath of this look like right now for that community, for any kind of impact it might have on awareness? What does that look like to you right now?
Well, there have been groups that have come in that have helped with the counseling aspect, and we think that's very important. And it may be that some individuals will need help and counseling for a long time to come to terms with what has happened. We obviously don't want to see a repeat of a tragedy like this anywhere in Tennessee, and certainly not in this community again. In our view, part of the solution long term is a public policy solution. We believe that the practices and policies of the Cheatham County Board of Education need to be reviewed. We would specifically like to see an inclusive non-discrimination policy, meaning sexual orientation and gender identity, added to their non-discrimination policy for students. We also want to see a beefed up effort at training for faculty and staff to recognize signs that a child is being bullied. There are many in the community who want to move toward clearer, swifter, stronger, whatever word you'd like to use, discipline for students who are doing the bullying. So all of those things are being explored. What the end result will be, I don't know. We have not seen a great deal of openness on the part of the school system at this point to adopt any new policies. But the great thing about the board rules for Cheatham County, a citizen can add an item to the school board agenda to be voted on, and that is precisely what we are helping members of the community put together. So at some point, the Board of Education is going to have to deal with this publicly and explicitly. They may turn it down, but it'll be on them if that's what they decide to do.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that would be something where if that were to happen, people could bring it up again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They could. So we'll look at a number of proposals there. But, you know, my sense is that if the Board of Education ignores a group of citizens who are bringing forward a proposal in that public forum, they will reap the public relations whirlwind. It will be awful for them. And it will be awful, sadly, for the students who continue to go to Cheatham County High School. What we want to see is safe schools for all these students. And it's the responsibility of the adults who have the power to make that happen.
In your opinion, what kind of difference have you seen when there are non-discrimination policies in place? And do you see, have you seen examples or anything?
Absolutely. In Knox County, the school system has an inclusive non-discrimination policy, and in Metro Nashville, there is an inclusive non-discrimination policy. I would not tell you that bullying has disappeared. I would not tell you that there are no students who don't say, oh, that's so gay. But I will tell you that it is a much more open and affirming environment for students who are either gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, or perceived to be. There are teachers who are trained to help in those situations, and teachers are trained in how to do proper interventions when there is bullying. And I think it has made a great deal of difference. I think we've come to those policies as the result of people working for a long time on that. One of my heroes on this is Stephen Henry, who is now the president of the Metro Nashville Education Association and a teacher in Metro, and has worked for years on these issues and was a real leader in when the contract negotiations were going on for teachers to get their non-discrimination policy. But Stephen has done countless trainings in Nashville for teachers, and I think people like Stephen and many others have made a real difference in our metro schools.
Mm-hmm. And I think it would be fair to say that those policies provide kind of a baseline and something for people, students, to come back and address grievances based on.
That's the key, Matthew. That's exactly it. Now, you know, you'll have people who come along and say, well, policy in and of itself can't change the situation. And they're absolutely right. It takes the will of the people involved. But when there is a policy, there's something for students and teachers to appeal to and say, look, we have a standard here, and the situation that I'm in right now doesn't live up to what the standard is. And I want justice in this situation. And, you know, maybe that's a good transition in a way to the Rolling Hills situation. Because we have a similar incident. There was policy in place, Health and Human Services, which is a branch of the federal government, had issued new regulations saying you cannot refuse a partner visitation in a healthcare facility that receives Medicare or Medicaid. It happened. It happened in Franklin. A partner was turned away. But
and it's another story that made national news.
Absolutely. But since the policy existed, when we contacted the facility and told them about the policy, they did a complete 180, and the situation was corrected. So having policy in place makes it much easier to correct a situation than if you don't have a policy in place. And we're glad to see some positive results come out of that. One thing that came out was that there was a story in the Tennessean right after this happened in which the Tennessee Hospital Association said, you know, back in September, we contacted all our member organizations and told them about this regulatory change. As it happens, I don't think Rolling Hills was a member of the association, but isn't it wonderful that the leading hospital association in our state proactively reached out to his members and said, here is the rule change, you must follow it. That immediately made the environment for everybody in Tennessee much better. We don't have marriage protections here, we don't have employment protections here, but we all, because of this federal rule change, have this protection when our partner's in the hospital.
And let's move on now to the story about the recent rape that was reported.
Right.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, the young man went to the Franklin police, and he reports that one of the officers said something to the effect of, isn't that what gays like? I'm paraphrasing, but it was the tone of the response he got when he reported this sexual assault. In our view, this is completely unacceptable if this kind of thing happened. And that's why, within half an hour of the story breaking, we called the Franklin police chief. We had to leave a message. He wasn't on the desk that night. I believe it was the Friday before New Year's Eve or thereabouts. And we said, you know, this is awful if this happened. It's only going to get worse until it gets better in the media. To prevent it from happening again, would you consider taking us up on our offer of free diversity training for your department? And unfortunately, we have not heard back. So we continue to talk about this story. We're considering our next move because we think it is extremely important that any victim of sexual assault, whether you're male or female, whether you're straight, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, should be treated with respect. It's a complete outrage. Now, fortunately, the victim's case has been transferred to Metro, and I'm told that he reports much more sympathetic dealing from the Metro Police, which again connects to policy change, I mm-hmm. think. In Metro, since 2009, we've had a very strong, vigorous discussion of non-discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in Metro government. Our Metro government has passed two non-discrimination ordinances. A number of individuals are appointed to different positions to boards and commissions who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. We've had openly gay candidates a number of times. The climate within Metro Nashville, certainly not perfect, is a real oasis in Middle Tennessee when you consider everything else that's been going on in this region. It's something we should appreciate. We should always push for more, and I know we will as a community. Mm-hmm. But we really have a lot of friends in Metro government, and I think that includes our police department, who treat victims with compassion and will listen regardless of your gender, regardless of your gender or identity or sexual orientation. So we hope that other police departments will adopt similar approaches.
And for our listeners who are in the Franklin area, is there anything they could do to be proactive to make sure there's a change? Would they write their council members?
They should write their aldermen. They should also, I think, contact the mayor directly, and I think they should contact the chief of police. And fortunately, this is very easy because the city of Franklin's website is very easy to use, and the police department subsection of the website, also very easy to use, provides all the phone numbers and email addresses, whichever is your preferred method of communication. But let your feelings be known. And I would say simply, you know, I heard about this story. What I want to see happen in the future is that all victims of crime are treated with compassion, regardless of gender, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity.
There's a lot of stuff going on, Chris. And just so our listeners know, could you please give us the address for Tennessee Equality Project's website?
Sure. On the web, you'll find us at tnep.org. where you'll find our most frequent updates are on Facebook, facebook.com/Tennessee Equality Project, all spelled out.
Great. And also for our listeners, just give us a quick reminder about what Tennessee Equality Project, maybe a little bit of the history of the organization, mm-hmm. and also what you all do.
Sure. We were founded in 2004 initially to fight the Marriage Discrimination Amendment. We all know how that turned out. It's on the books, unfortunately. But it was fortunate in another way that we were founded then, because when the marriage amendment was passing, a whole slew of other anti-equality bills were introduced, adoption bans and the like, and we were able to work with others and beat those bills. And so basically what we do, we provide government relations or lobbying on behalf of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community at both the state level with our General Assembly and with local governments around the state. A big part of our history is working on the 2009 and 2011 non-discrimination ordinances that passed in Metro. We worked on some others in Memphis and Shelby County that we hope will eventually pass, but there's still more work to do there. And whenever there is some issue with a government body in Tennessee, we attempt to mediate. But if mediation doesn't work, we will put pressure and bring citizen response to bear, lobbying, media relations, whatever it takes to push for change in that situation.
And there have certainly been instances in the past where the Tennessee Equality Project has partnered with other organizations, mm-hmm. both locally and nationally, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When we can, we work with the Human Rights Campaign. For example, if they're working on a federal bill, whether they're working on ENDA or the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we will partner with them and pass along key messages about contacting lawmakers when they think it's the best time to put pressure on lawmakers when a bill is coming up. At the state and local level, of course, we work a great deal with the Tennessee Transgender Political Coalition, and in the legislature, we work with the ACLU of Tennessee. We often find ourselves on the same side of issues with them. We work with party caucuses. I'd be exaggerating if I said we worked extensively with the Republican caucus, but we work with individual Republican lawmakers when we can because we're bipartisan. We want to work with whoever wants to be helpful. So if any of your listeners are Republican, whether they're Democrat, Independent, you have a place in TEP. You're welcome. Everyone can contribute because it's going to take all of us, really, to stop the discriminatory legislation and advance equal rights legislation.
Mm-hmm. And talking about legislation, I know one of the things that you all get involved with is it Equality Day on the Hill?
That's right. And that's coming up on March 13th this year. It's a little bit later than usual, but we hope that's a warmer time for everyone, and we hope that works out well. The night before, on March 12th, it's not definite yet, but we're planning a rally in Nashville to bring together equality advocates from around the state, just as a show of force and to show that there are a lot of citizens from all over Tennessee who really support equality.
Mm-hmm. And for people who are listening who feel like They don't know anything about lobbying, and so it's something new and different to them. What does it involve usually when you have people come in for that?
Well, it really is very simple, but you're absolutely right. It sounds off-putting, intimidating, something I can't do. But really, all it amounts to is setting up a quick appointment with your member of the Tennessee House or your member of the Tennessee Senate, going to the appointment and talking about a few bills, and we can help you with that, the bill numbers, the talking points, bills that are important to you. In some cases, your legislator will engage you in dialogue. In other cases, the legislator will just sit back, listen, maybe take a few notes. There are, unfortunately, even a few instances where they will argue back if they don't happen to be persuaded. So it can go any of a number of routes, but it always helps because it reminds these lawmakers that they have gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender and straight allied constituents who care about these issues. If we don't remind them, they're not going to pick up on it.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very important point because it seems to me that, you know, often people get kind of the short-term focus in mind.
Sure.
And what often gets ignored is that long-term focus and the value of a relationship, a building of a relationship. I know, and I've listened to other people like Dr. Marissa Richmond on the show, for example. Part of what seems to be valuable and important is even if, you know, a legislator may not be with you when you first start meeting with them, it's very important to start somewhere, to start with a relationship and build on that.
Right. Because chances are at some point you will find some piece of legislation where you do agree. And that is a great starting point. So we highly recommend that folks consider taking a half day off from work and doing that if they are able. We know that's not possible for everyone. Regardless of whether you can come today on the Hill, you as a citizen can call your lawmaker and set up an appointment any time of the year. All you have to do is go to capital, capitol.tn.gov, and you can plug in your address and you can find your state legislators. Everyone has a member of the House and everyone has a senator. You can find their email address. You can find their phone number. You can email them any time of the year. And if you follow us on Facebook or get our email updates, you'll know when bills are coming up and when to contact them. But you don't have to wait on us. You can take the responsibility and do it yourself anytime you'd like.
All right. We have just a couple of minutes left. Are there any things that TEP is maybe partnering with national organizations or is focusing on a federal level right now?
There's nothing at the federal level right now that we're working on. What we will be working on, I'm hopeful, is that at some point, either this year or after the presidential election, ENDA will be back and it will start moving again. And when it does, we will work very hard with national organizations to really put as much pressure as possible on our members of Congress, our U.S. senators, to be in the affirmative. Right now, we have two members of the House of Representatives who come from Tennessee who are co-sponsors, Steve Cohen out of Memphis and Jim Cooper out of Nashville, and we obviously would love for them to continue to be supportive. We'd love to have more support out of the Tennessee delegation, and we'd love to pick up at least one U.S. senator. So continue to write to these folks whenever you can go to events where they're present, stop them and say, you know, and is very important to me. I'd love to see you sign on to that.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee any possible issues coming up before city councils across Tennessee this year that may be important?
I think so. At some point before the coming up before the Memphis City Council, their non-discrimination ordinance, I think, will probably come back at some point this year. What I see happening next in Metro Nashville, and I don't know whether it'll be this year or maybe next, is we would like to see partner benefits for Metro government employees. Currently, no public body in Tennessee offers partner benefits. It's a glass ceiling we need to break. But it's also something that I think fits in the progression after a non-discrimination policy has been passed for them. Now they can come out and be who they are. Let's do things that give them an incentive to stay working with Metro government. And part of that is protecting their partners. I know of one instance in which a job candidate turned Metro down because we didn't offer partner benefits. So we don't want to lose opportunities for talent either. And I think this is very important. And I think you will see support for it.
All right. So there's a lot coming up on the plate. And Chris, one more time, please give our listeners the email address.
Yes.
And the website address.
The website is tnep.org. You can email us at info@tnep.org, facebook.com/Tennessee Equality Project, all spelled out.
All right. Thanks for being on the program. Chris Sanders with the Tennessee Equality Project. I'm Matthew Stafford, and you've been listening to Queer Talk. Join us again next week. And thank you to Dr. Joyce Arnold, our producer.